Mornings with Bucky and Aaron are brought to you by Bud Light.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Oh, man, what a Wednesday it is. What a great time of year. A lot of sports conversations, college and pro football. Major League Baseball at its climax here in Final Four. Great stuff last night. Also, NBA up and running. NHL up and running. F1 coming your way this weekend. And I will reiterate, I was out at F1 yesterday, out of COTA, picking up some passes for some folks and talking to the director of marketing. They really, really need you to understand. If you haven't already prepaid for your parking and you're going to be out there this weekend, make sure you plan on the shuttle. Do not believe you can just drive out to COTA and park, and when you get there, they're going to turn you around. All of the parking is pre-reserved because, say, there's 100,000 people coming out there each day that weekend. They just don't have enough parking spots, and that's why they have the shuttles that you can take from various locations throughout town. Central, you know, the airport's got a shuttle, I believe. The downtown's got the shuttles. So you're going to have to make a plan to get out there if you haven't already, you know, gotten your parking taken care of. And that's they you know, from the PR side of things, they're trying to get that message out because the last thing they want is you to drive out there and then be told that you've got to go get on a shuttle somewhere and the shuttles are full. So it's a Wednesday now. Make your plan. Hopefully you have. But it should be a great weekend. Weather's going to be good. For the F1 weekend and the world, another global event descending upon Austin after 2 weekends of ACL Festival with the Global Music Festival that goes on here. You know, we have South by Southwest in the spring, and here comes F1, the world. And it's a big race. We'll closer to the end of the week, we'll get into how important this race is. It's a huge race as far as the season goes for Formula One racing, so we'll get into that. Also, Zay, I knew it was coming. Here we go. First headline I've seen. Laz Diaz screwed the Red Sox in Game 4 of the ALCS. You know it's coming. That's going to be your national narrative today. There's no doubt, and I can't hard to disagree, but in the end, the Astros got the win last night. And I'll say it again, Laz Diaz is a bad umpire. He is case in point of why we need automated. I got a text from my buddy Mike Harge, who played minor league baseball for 12 years or so, and he said, here's what he says. He says, Laz is the same. He's always been. Dealt with him in the minor leagues. He sucks. Yeah. Well, then if you're dealing with Laz Diaz in the minor leagues and he can't call balls and strikes for anything, how does he elevate it? Now he's calling LCS games. I mean,
yeah, he got the call to the show.
I don't get it. I mean, it's like Major League Baseball wants bad umpires. I mean, there's got to be better than that. I mean, there's judgment calls and there's I'm okay with guys that have narrow strike zones. I'm okay with guys who have big strike zones, but you know that going in, it's kind of part of the scouting report. Kind of you got to deal with it. It's one of the elements, but you can't have an erratic strike zone. You can't have small then big then some off the plate and giving you both corners one inning, and it was a mess. And we'll get into why the Red Sox fans are not real happy with what went on in the ninth inning last night at Fenway Park. Either way, it's part of a fun Wednesday here on B&E. Let's pay off your B&E fact of the day, and then we'll get into the headlines and the two big comebacks in the LCSs. But, Zay, can you guess how many times the LA Dodgers and the Brooklyn Dodgers in the history of the organization and all of their postseason history, which is lengthy, how many times they've ever come back from three runs or more down within the eighth inning or later? So six outs or less, three runs or more down. How many times have the Dodgers come back to win a postseason ballgame?
I'm going to say four.
The answer until yesterday was zero.
Wow.
Zero times. 81 chances that's happened. They've never come back. 0-81 in those scenes, in those scenarios. So pretty amazing. That's why yesterday was clutch for sure in that regard. We'll also get into the football coming up. We've got the Longhorns at their bye week 1 hour from now. We're going to talk to lifetime Longhorn Dan Neal, the member of the Longhorn Hall of Honor, great offensive lineman at Texas. What is he seeing as this team repairable at this point as far as their fourth quarter woes and the ability to close out football games physically and mentally. We'll talk to Dan about that. Also, Quan Cosby will be a guest this morning, among others. Got a great guest lineup, great conversations. First, the trending topics of your Wednesday. UBO Business Services brings it to you, and we'll start with the baseball. If you fell asleep last night, you missed one heck of a ninth inning at Fenway Park. We'll start with the earlier game in the American League and then in the National League. How about the comebacks last night? The defending champion Dodgers down 5-2 in the eighth inning, with the Atlanta Braves already up 2-0 in the series and a 3-run lead with 5 outs to play. Cody Bellinger comes to the plate with 2 aboard and 2 strikes.
Presenting the tying run here in the eighth inning. And he sends one high and deep, way back right center field. We are tied! Cody Bellinger strikes again!
Unbelievable. High fastball took it out. It tied the game at 5. Couple of batters later, Mookie Betts, the always clutch Mookie Betts, comes up with a big RBI double that put the Dodgers in front, and they would hold the lead. They win it 6-5 and avoid a 3-0 hole. Series now 2-1 advantage Braves. But the Dodgers get themselves back in the series, and they'll play game 4 of that series tonight at Dodger Stadium. Also last night, high drama at Fenway Park. Boston Red Sox, Houston Astros. Astros finally get some quality pitching out of their bullpen. Christian Javier and some others did a nice job for the Astros. They gave up 2 runs in the first inning, Zach Greinke did, but then the bullpen shut it down from there. Advance it to the eighth inning. It's 2-1. Red Sox lead the game with 6 outs to go. Jose Altuve leads off the eighth inning with a home run. Ties the game over the Green Monster. That ties it at 2. Go to the ninth inning now, and the Red Sox have turned to their starting pitcher, their ace, Nathan Eovaldi, to try to get some length here in a game that looked like it might be going to extra innings. The Astros rally. Carlos Correa led off the frame with a double to start the frame, but back-to-back strikeouts got it to 2 outs. Jason Castro at the plate, the light-hitting catcher for the Astros in a 2-2 count.
That is a base hit into center. Correa coming to the plate. Astros take the lead here in game 4.
Huge, huge hit for Castro. Astros take the lead. They go on to score 6 more times in the frame. Michael Brantley with 2 outs had a big rip into the gap, which cleared the bases. They go on to put 7 on the board and win the game 9-2 and even the series at 2-2. Game number 5 is today, the all-important game 5 in a best-of-7 series. Framber Valdez faces Chris Sale at Fenway Park this afternoon. That game just after 3 o'clock today. Also last night, NBA regular season opened with a doubleheader of action. Milwaukee, the Bucks raised their championship banner and then ripped Brooklyn 127-104. Giannis, 31 points, 14 rebounds. Also last night, Steph Curry posted an opening night a triple-double to lead the Warriors past the LA Lakers 121-114. Curry finishes with 21 points, 10 rebounds, 10 dimes. LeBron James scored 34 in the loss. We now know that both Texas basketball teams, men's and women's, will be ranked in the preseason to start the upcoming year. Vic Schaefer's women ranked 25th in the preseason women's poll that was released yesterday. Chris Beard and the Texas men ranked 5th in the preseason men's poll, which was released last week. How about some football news? Looks like the Houston Texans are willing to part ways with former Pro Bowler Whitney Merciless, the pass rusher. Going to be let go and go find a contender to play for. Also, injury news from the NFL, and it's not good. Ronnie Stanley, the Pro Bowl left tackle of the Baltimore Ravens, will be out for the season. Going to have surgery on a leg injury. And the Dawson Knox, the fine tight end of the Buffalo Bills, out for an extended period of time with a broken hand.
This segment brought to you by UBO Business Services. Great people, great service, endless possibilities. That's UBO Business Services. Visit them at ubeo.com.
All right, so there you go. Since the Texans are not trying to win, they're trying to lose. Whitney Merciless is now going to move on. Good for him. I like Whitney. He's been a good player for Houston. He's going to get a chance to go, and he can help a team. I mean, he's not a star player, but he is a nice piece as a pass rusher for the right team. We'll keep an eye on where Whitney Merciless heads to, a very popular player down in the city of Houston. He's done a lot of charitable work and really a fan favorite down there as Houston continues to unload anybody that it's good. It started with DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, both in Arizona now, and they are, it's a garage sale down in Houston at this point, a mess. Cowboys into their bye week, and the baseball last night was hot and heavy, and we'll get into some of that football talk coming as we move forward. But, Zay, you were keen in on the NBA last night, and that season just underway as well. So we got all that out there. This says our buddy Chief Cantu, Police Chief Cantu, is weighing in. He's out in Mustang Ridge right by COTA. He says, my traffic control company, public safety, 120 officers for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's going to be busy. I have officers from all over Texas coming in to work the event. That would be CODA. That's pretty cool because that's a big one. It's a global event that rolls into Austin, Texas. And this guy says, you're right, E, for all the experience that umpires have in Major League Baseball, it's absolutely awful. Thankfully for us, he didn't ring up Castro, but he has no business being behind the plate. And that's the deal, and that's why the headlines today and the conversations are going to center around the home plate umpire. I mentioned that, you know, they track this stuff now, right? I mean, so when an umpire has a bad night, it's all for all to see. Major League Baseball tracks it. Every umpire gets a report after each game of how they did, calling balls and strikes and things they missed and things they need to work on. So we all see it too. And Laz Diaz, by the metrics, missed by the numbers, missed over 20 calls, missed over 20 ball and strike calls in the ball game last night. And there's a spray chart of this, and they're bad. I mean, they're just really bad. And the one that has the Red Sox up in arms the most, the Red Sox fans, was a 2-2 pitch to Jason Castro from Nathan Eovaldi in the ninth inning. Looked like a strike. I mean, it was a breaking ball that broke over the and say this wasn't one of these, painted the black on the corner. This was really over the right, just the right side of the strike zone. It really wasn't debatable. It was inside the box pretty heavily. Called a ball. Laz Diaz missed it. And, of course, on the next two pitches later on a split finger that was the worst pitch Eovaldi threw, Castro ripped it up the middle, and Astros go on to score 7 runs. Red Sox are going to argue that should have been a strike. Inning should have been over. It should have been 2-2. We've got our starter on the mound and what looks like it might be an extra inning game. Astros pitching staff is already battered and beleaguered, and we've got our ace on the mound. You screwed us out of a chance to go up 3-1. That's how baseball go, as they say, but that's why I've been arguing for an automated strike zone for a long, long time now. But either way, Astros were happy that he did not bring up Jason Castro, and they get the victory. That leads us into our Coach's Corner. It's brought to you by Audiovisual Consultations. It's avconsultations.com online. Our buddy Tom McKay and his great crew there. And it surprises me, Zay, you're on board with the automated strike zone idea. I thought you would be kind of an old school guy on that.
No, get the call right.
Get the call, and especially if you have the technology to do so, right? There's little debate at this point. We have the technology. It's like the $6 million man. We can do this. It is doable. And as I've always argued and debated, that the average fan wouldn't even notice the difference. They wouldn't, because there'd still be a guy behind home plate wearing a black thing with the mask on. He'd still be calling balls and strikes. So there would just be a machine there, something in his hand that would tell him whether it's a ball or a strike, and he'd call it. He still has to, handle home plate umpiring duties, foul tips and, plays at the plate and all the things that go on at home plate. It wouldn't be like there'd be no umpire out there. He'd still be there running the game as the crew chief, most likely, or at least that night's crew chief. And, it's doable. It really is. They're doing it at several levels of the minor leagues, but I will say that that's going to be the national narrative because it was the Red Sox that got hosed by the hated Astros. But in the end, if you're an Astro fan, it was pretty sweet to watch them rally and get a win. And boy, it's amazing, Zay, how one swing potentially and one bad call by an umpire can swing this series, because the Astros indeed were on the ropes. I mean, they have not had a starting pitcher pitch into the third inning yet. So you're now 4 games in as of last night. So your bullpen is just getting overworked in this series. And that's why Alex Cora, the manager of the Red Sox, went to his starting pitcher last night, Nathan Eovaldi. Eovaldi was likely to be the starter in game 6 down in Houston, but he's saying, Cora's seen an opportunity here to seize an opportunity and say, look, if we get this game, we are in control of the series. The Astros bullpen is going to be worn out. So he goes to his starter thinking this game could go into extra innings. This game could go to the 10th or the 11th or the 12th inning, and I'm going to put a starter on the mound who's ready to go and can give us some length here. The Astros are running out of arms quickly, and we have a huge advantage if we can get to extra frames. And if Laz Diaz rings up Jason Castro on a 2-2 call, the inning's over, and Cora is probably in the right, and that game may have been headed to extra frames. Instead, Astros get the win. They rally for 7 runs, and now Cora's going to be questioned for going to his starter, because if the Astros could find a way to win today, then Cora's got to come up with somebody to start game 6 back in Houston. Becomes the chess match here, Zay, because he tried to seize it last night. It did, kind of blew up in his face. And now the Astros, who you can almost argue, may have an advantage pitching if they can get Framber Valdez, who's their game 1 starter, if he can pitch and pitch like we've seen him before in the postseason, and come up with a big, pitch 6 innings, Pitch into the sixth. Give you a chance. Maybe even into the seventh. Boy, that might be begging here. He only pitched 2 2/3 in his game one start. But, you know, on the positive side of things for Dusty Baker, Zay, if he could give you some length here and the Astros can find a way to get to Chris Sale today, you know, now all of a sudden a series that looked, you know, looking bleak for the Astros, all of a sudden could be back into a winnable scenario, and a World Series is not out of the question in Houston right now.
Yeah, and things weren't looking good with all those grand slams that the Astros have given up, and you saw Correa talking smack in the first game, pointing to his wrist like he was Dame Lillard. So, yeah, this has been a hell of a series, and I'm looking forward to it, you know, going back to Houston with the Astros going 3-2.
Well, and so you could argue that the Astros got some momentum with that seventh inning last night because Brantley came up and stretched it out, and everybody took good at-bats off of Martin Perez in the ninth. And so, but again, the old adage, I believe, is true. It's your momentum in baseball is your next day starting pitcher. I mean, you know, Framber Valdez has to go pitch good. He did not pitch good in game one, which has really led to a lot of the Astros' pitching woes here. Lance McCullers injury, huge. But, you know, when you had to go get Framber, which I thought Dusty had a quick hook in that game, but when he didn't even last through the third inning, that's led them to these issues with their pitching depth right now. But we'll see. Big game today, obviously. Game five in a 2-2 series of a best of seven. Always massive. Can we hear from Jason Castro last night, the hero for the Astros? Got the big hit. Here's a little bit of sound from Jason Castro talking to the Fox crew after the ball game.
What sort of feedback? You came off the bench. You'd never faced Nathan Eovaldi. Two outs, two strikes, two men on in the ninth. What was your approach?
You know, I know he mixes a lot. He's got, plus pitches pretty much all up and down his repertoire. So, you know, I was trying to stay within myself and just get a good pitch to hit. I mean, obviously, he's got a plus fastball, so you got to respect that. But, you know, I was able to kind of fight some off and then just get a pitch that I was able to stay through. And, you know, that's really all I'm trying to do, not do too much and just, you know, hit the ball solidly.
The 1-2 curveball was awfully close. How did you see it?
I mean, I had it like that. I mean, obviously out of hand, you know, with his big fastball, I'm trying not to swing at anything that starts off that where that started. So, you know, it's a game of inches, and, you know, you just try to stick with your approach up there and you know, just let kind of what happens, happens.
You were a first-round draft pick of the Astros in 2008. You've had an 11-year career. Where did that moment rank for you?
It's up there. I mean, you know, this is my first time in the CS series, and, you know, to be a part of this team and come back here after, you know, I was gone for a number of years, and, you know, it's just, it's nice to be home and to be on a winning Astros team again is pretty special.
Jason. All right, there you go. Jason Castro, who we'll see where this series goes now at 2-2, but could go down as you know, maybe the biggest swing of the series if the Astros can get some good pitching from Framber Valdez today. And, of course, the text line lights up, and we appreciate it here on the show with the people. Says, E, Stroh's got hosed by 16 of those 21 crappy calls, so the Sox can suck it. No, that's true. That is true. And somebody pointed out that one batter before Jason Castro played the hero last night, Aledmys Diaz pinch hit, and he got hosed by a couple of those calls, too, I felt like, that went Boston's way and Eovaldi's way in that spot. I would also say, if you went to sleep last night, Carlos Correa needs to be on third base leading off. I mean, I love CC. I do think he's going to sign away somewhere else this offseason. But, Zay, he ripped one opposite field off of Eovaldi as the leadoff hitter. And if he's beating it out of the box, and if he's hustling, if he's thinking triple off out of the gate, he gets a triple. So it's a leadoff triple instead of a double, which is huge in that scenario. He ends up just on second base. So you know, that would be something of note as well. How about this day in our coach's corner? It was on this day in 1996. We always love to go to old great coaching rants and clips. You know, we play all the time, Zay, the Jim Mora playoffs, right? This was another one from Jim Mora. October 20th, this day, 1996, as Jim Mora's Saints fell to the Panthers of Carolina. We have a little of this. Here we go.
What went into the decision?
Oh, we got to find it. This day in sports clips. We love these. These are always good because it reminds us of great sporting coaching rants. We have a little bit. Zay, here we go.
My family was named.
Well, what happened? Oh, no. Computer's not working. That happens, I guess. This says, Z, you're forgetting that umpires missed the Devers strikeout in the first inning for the Sox to score the first run. No, I'm not forgetting. I know Laz Diaz was a mess. It was the whole game. I was texting with our friend Gene Watson from the Kansas City Royals last night. Hey, this guy Laz Diaz a mess. You know, it was all game, and that's my argument for an automated strike zone. I agree. It went both ways. It was not advantage either team, but in the end, in a big 2-2, or as you just heard, 1-2 pitch to Jason Castro, it was called a ball, and that allowed him to have an extra swing and go on. So that's, I'm just telling you, that's going to be the conversation on a national scene today, because it was the Red Sox, and it was a big out, and now, you know, Astros get the win, and everybody hates the Astros because of the cheating scandal. It's just a built-in piece of drama headed into game 5 this afternoon. All right, now Jim Mora, 1996, this day in sports history. We got to play it because we love to go back and hear the archived audio.
Well, what happened was that second game, we got our ass kicked, or the second half. We just got our ass totally kicked. We couldn't do diddly-poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to. It was a horse performance in the second half. Horse. I'm totally embarrassed and totally ashamed. Coaching did a horrible job. The players did a horrible job. We got our ass kicked in that second half. It sucked. It stunk.
And I think it's fair to say that, and keep in mind, the Saints, he resigned the next day. He quit the post, because that's what Longhorn fans wanted Steve Sarkisian to say in the post game on Saturday, right? That could have lined up with. Could we play that again, Zay, and think about Steve Sarkisian, Texas, up 24-13. You know, looking like they're going to get a big victory over a top 12 team on Saturday, and this is what Texas fans wanted to hear from their head football coach.
Well, what happened was that second game we got our ass kicked, or the second half we just got our ass totally kicked. We couldn't do diddly-poo offensively. We couldn't make a first down. We couldn't run the ball. We didn't try to run the ball. We couldn't complete a pass. We sucked. The second half, we sucked. We couldn't stop the run. Every time they got the ball, they went down and got points. We got our ass totally kicked in the second half. That's what it boiled down to. It was a horse performance in the second half. Horse. I'm totally embarrassed and totally ashamed. Coaching did a horrible job. The players did a horrible job. We got our ass kicked in that second half. It sucked. It stunk.
Diddly-poo. That kind of summed up the Longhorns on Saturday in the second half, too. But Jim Moore did resign the next day. And so on October 21st of 1996. Always loved Jim Moore. That's good. Good stuff right there in our coach's corner. Appreciate everybody weighing in on the drama of last night. Cody Bellinger, what a hit, man. Think about that, Zay. In the history of the Dodgers, they've never come back in a game in that scenario in the postseason. I mean, that is... it's crazy, and to see it, and in the moment that it was, I mean, the Braves are about to take a 3-0 advantage, about to go up 3-0 in the series with five outs left, up in a three-run lead with five outs to play in the ballgame to go up 3-0, and Bellinger just tomahawks a high fastball out of the park, and it's 5-5, and then it's hard not to enjoy watching Mookie Betts play baseball. Guy is just a stud. He comes up with the big clutch double that put the Dodgers in front for good, and they get the victory there, and we'll see. Did that salvage the series? Did Jason Castro salvage the series for the Astros? Jose Altuve, can't forget him, hit the big home run in the eighth inning leading off to tie the game when the Astros were trailing 2-1. That is now Jose's 21st postseason home runs, with his third all-time. Think about that, third all-time for Jose Altuve with postseason home runs. That was a big one in the eighth inning. Coming back, we'll pick up these conversations. Isaiah Collier leads us to the hot or not topics for the end of the hour. And Dan Neal, the lifetime Longhorn and Longhorn member of the Longhorn Hall of Honor, two-time Super Bowl winner, will join us to talk Texas football in the 8 o'clock hour. It's a busy one on B&E.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
Cruising through a Wednesday on B&E, getting you up over the hump. And, it would have been Tom Petty's birthday today. Nice job, Zay. Would have been 71. Fortunate to have seen Tom Petty in his final time through Austin back in, I guess it was 20... Was it the same year? Yeah, I think he died in the same year. It was the summer of 2017. Gary Clark Jr. opened for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers at the Irwin Center and was fortunate to be there. It was, I believe, if memory, it was a Tuesday night. So it was one of those, man, Tuesday night, I get up the next morning, do I want to go there? And boy, I'm thrilled that I went. And of course, he passed away later of that prescription overdose malfunction mess thing, which took him way too early. But Tom Petty would have been 71, so we'll play some of his tunes throughout the course of the morning. And we're talking plenty of baseball. Somebody texted and mentioned and said, E, that Bellinger home run was up in his shoulders. That should have been a strikeout. And that's what takes that that clutch performance to a new level. Because, yeah, I mean, he threw him the high fastball, which, you know, that looks good. What do they call that? The dessert fastball, the Bev cart. I mean, it looks good, but it's bad for you. You're not going to be able to catch up to the high cheese. And not only did he catch up to it, Bellinger ripped it into the seats, which very few people on this planet can hit that ball over the fence, which added to the drama. And because the Braves are sitting over there going, well, you know, that wasn't that bad of a pitch. I mean, 1-2 pitch up out of the zone, see if he'll chase a high fastball and strike out. Well, you hit it out of the park. That was the Dodgers' comeback, and the Astros get the win as well, which people are weighing in on. Also, 2-2 in the Astros series, 2-1 in the Braves-Dodgers series. And, Zay, it's official now. Well, not official, but I'm starting to make my plan here, because if these Dallas Cowboys who are in their bye week continue to play like they are, I've reached out today to our friend Commander Sergeant Major Cliff Burgoyne out at Fort Hood, who we got to meet out there a couple weeks ago when we did our show. I'm going to get into a regimen, because if I'm I promised for 22 years on this show that I'll walk to Dallas if the Cowboys win the Super Bowl with Jerry Jones as their general manager. That's a promise I've made, and I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm starting to believe that they can. Which means I got to get ready, right? I can't walk 188 miles without some training. So I'm going to get my buddy, our friend, Commander Sergeant Major Burgoyne out there to get me in I need some type of training regimen, Zay. I got to get on it.
Well, good thing the producer always has to stay here.
Yeah.
I ain't going with you.
I know. I gotta get a plan in here. Maybe start doing some yoga. And I say that because here's the other thing that the Cowboys have. Not only are they playing better football than anybody, and Arizona Cardinals would be the one team that you would put stack up with them at this point. And look, Arizona's got some street cred to themselves too. They're 6-0. They went into LA and beat the Rams, who were a 5-1 football team. They went into Cleveland last week and beat up on the Browns. I mean, they've got some quality victories, and that's where the Cowboys are. That the Cowboys, you know, they're who have they beaten that's a really, really good team? You know, that becomes a question that I have. That have they beaten one of the top teams in the NFL yet? I don't know. I mean, they played Tampa. You remember, they lost the game, though. Like, they lost the football game to Tom Brady. They outplayed the Buccaneers, I thought, that night in a lot of phases, and probably should have won that ball game, but they did not. So they lost that game, but they're now, you know, sitting atop the easiest division in football with the rest of that NFC least. And now, you know, this becomes about attrition and injuries, right? I mean, that becomes, you know, who can stay healthy? We know who the best teams are now. That's what we know, I think, pretty confidently through 6 weeks or 7 weeks of football, preseason and now. Who are the best teams, right? Arizona is legitimate. Kyler Murray's an MVP candidate. There's no debate. He shredded the Browns last week, and the Browns have a pretty good defense. He's got weapons to throw to. The offense is clicking. They just acquired Zach Ertz from the Philadelphia Eagles. And then their defense, with the acquisitions of J.J. Watt and the draft picks that they've made, defense is legitimate. It throttled back the Rams' offense. It throttled back the Browns last week. They're playing at a really high level. And the Cowboys are very good. The Buccaneers are very good with Tom Brady. They're the defending champions until proven otherwise. And, you know, here we are in the NFC with the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers are, you know, still sitting at 5-1, and the Packers feel like the hollowest of the 5-1 teams, because they had to go to overtime to beat the Bengals. They struggled with the Bears a little bit on Sunday, so I think they would be in the pecking order, you know, behind the other three that I just mentioned. And then I got to put the Rams in there too, but the Rams already lost to Arizona. Rams are a good football team, but to me at this point, Zay, and I'm just looking at the NFC. Over in the AFC, we know what's there, but it's who can stay healthy now, and the Cowboys are about to get healthier. Like, this bye week comes at a time where they've put the 5-1-1-1 mark on the board. They've announced that they're a contender for the big thing. And now here comes Lael Collins off of suspension to play right tackle. and Terrence Steele got to really get some playing time to provide depth there. He's a nice alternative now. If something else happens, they get Michael Gallup back off of injury. They're going to get DeMarcus Lawrence back here in a couple of weeks off of injury. So they're just going to keep adding. If they can continue to avoid key injuries, which you know they've already kind of been through theirs, I'm looking over there at the Baltimore Ravens. You realize Ronnie Stanley's now out for the year? They're starting left tackle. I mean, think about the Ravens with Lamar Jackson over in the AFC. We know they're not going to get a single down out of their top three running backs. J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, out. They blew their knees out in training camp. Marcus Peters, their starting corner all-pro, he's out for the year. Ronnie Stanley's now out for the year. Their tight end, Nick Boyle, the standout, the blocker, plus their starting defensive tackle, Derek Wolfe, have yet to play. Yet they're 5-1, but that's not sustainable if you're going to take all those injuries. Eventually that catches you, and that's, to me, the scariest part of the Cowboys, Zay, is that not only are they very good, I think they're going to be adding pieces to this team as the season goes forward.
Yeah, and you got to have a lot of luck to hoist that Lombardi trophy up at the end of the season. And I don't think anybody expected Wilson to be this good, coming, you know, being the third wide receiver. People didn't expect Micah Parsons to be this good. So, yeah, they've been very impressive. And like you said, you just got to stay healthy, and hopefully they could do that. And you remember when we were worried about Dak Prescott's shoulder injury, like he was throwing too much in the preseason and they kept him out, and you know, so now it's about his calf, and you know, that shoulder injury, we don't even think about that now. You know, he's up for MVP votes. So yeah, you just gotta stay healthy, and that's what the Cowboys are gonna be faced for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and can you keep Dak healthy? Now he's got the calf injury, and he says it's kind of a minor thing. He landed awkwardly on that touchdown throw to CeeDee Lamb in overtime to beat the Patriots. So he, you know, he kind of winked at people at his press conference this week, saying, you know, this will give you guys something to talk about. But now they have the extra week to get healthier. And look, let me say this, they also have the extra week to really try to polish some things up on that defense, because I think the biggest surprises for me with the Cowboys so far have been the performance of Dak Prescott. And maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but I've watched Dak's whole career. You've watched and say, I've never seen him play this good. I mean, he is so accurate right now. His decision-making, he's so decisive with where he wants to go with the football. I know he's got a lot of options, but, man, he's getting the ball out of his hand quick. It's a really, really powerhouse offense, and you know they can run the ball. The offensive line's back to playing good. But that's my biggest surprise is just how good Dak has been. I knew he would be a good player, but he's playing like a great player. He's playing like an elite MVP kind of player. And as a matter of fact, right now in Vegas, through 6 weeks, Dak Prescott is the odds favorite to win the league MVP in 2021, which, you know, you got Lamar Jackson in there, Tom Brady, Kyler Murray is ranked highly on that, Josh Allen, who was runner-up last year. And you always have to have Pat Mahomes in that conversation. And I would put Derrick Henry in there after what we saw him do on Monday Night Football and the numbers he's putting up on the ground. But Dak right now, the odds favorite in Vegas as far as that goes. And the other big surprise is just how good the defense has been. I mean, not only is Dak the MVP, Trayvon Diggs is the defensive player of the year. I don't know that we've ever seen a defensive player. I mean, you can go back to Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, J.J. Watt. Name me a player that's had this kind of impact in the first 6 weeks of an NFL season. I mean, he's had a pick in at least one in every game. He's scored more touchdowns than his brother, Stephon Diggs, who's a receiver. He's changing games on a week-by-week basis. And, you know, his pick six late in the game against the Patriots was huge. Of course, he got burned on the next play, which was a pretty cool theater, but the Cowboys still won the game. That guy's playing unbelievable, and that's kind of my thought through this bye week. You know, Dan Quinn's a new defensive coordinator. These young guys, Micah Parsons, these newcomers, they're still kind of learning this defense. Can they polish that up and be even better coming out of the bye, Zay, on that side of the ball? If they are, that's going to be a tough team to beat because the schedule's favorable. They play in an easy division. And now if you're the Cowboys, here's your two goals. You keep getting better. You stay healthy. And then you start thinking about home field advantage. I mean, that's what you got to be thinking about in a conference where you're dealing with Tom Brady, where you're dealing with Matt Stafford and the Rams, Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. You want home games come playoff time, because at this point, I mean, they would have to wholesale collapse to not make the postseason because the division is so bad, and they've already posted five victories. They're going to get to play that division, you know, through the course of the rest of this year. Cowboys are going to be in the postseason. The question becomes, where will they be? Can they be the top seed and have everything, get a bye week, have things roll through Arlington in that time of the year? That becomes the question for the Cowboys. So, yes, I am going to talk to Command Sergeant Major Burgoyne. He's going to design me a regimen. Somebody said, hey, you play golf, just start walking on the golf course. So I do that from time to time. But I need more than that. I mean, I'm walking 200 miles here. Somebody said socks, E, and then shoes. Think about your socks. So we'll have to start building that, the logistics of the walk too. And maybe the more we talk about it, Zay, the more it's unlikely to happen. You know what I'm saying? There's the whole jinx mindset there too. But I would like to see the, and that's part of it. I will be rooting for the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl. I think I would like to see that. It'd be great for the radio station. It'd be great for Texas. It'd be great for Austin and Cowboys fans to get back and be in a Super Bowl situation. And I think this team is talented enough to do that. And we'll ask Dan Neal that question coming up. He's watching the Cowboys and the rest of the NFL, and he hates the Cowboys too because he's like me. We were from Houston. We grew up not liking the Cowboys, but I'm rooting for them. But I'm not rooting to walk to Dallas. We will also have your hot or not topics coming up. Dan Neal talking Texas football and football in general. Plenty to do on a busy Wednesday. With Bucky out this morning, glad you are with us on the Show of the People, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
What's hot? And what's not?
This segment brought to you by Altstadt Beers, brewed right here in the heart of the Hill Country. Check out their state-of-the-art brewery, tap room, and restaurant next time you're in Fredericksburg. Altstadt Beers, no impurities, no regrets.
Oh man, B&E with you. People asking about the promise to walk to Dallas. It was 22 years ago on these... In Austin Airways, let's just say that. It was on a previous radio station, the first all-sports radio station in Austin, Texas, back in the late 90s that we went on the air with. But yeah, say, when I made the promise, I was 26. Young, brash, sports talk yakker. Now I'm 48. Some would argue that my point was proven because I said the Cowboys, and remember, the Cowboys had just won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, not too recently. When I said that they'll never win a Super Bowl, Jerry Jones is GM, and you know, a lot more bold then, but it's stood up the test of time. And there's also the debate: is Jerry Jones really the general manager right now? Is it Steven? Is it Will? I mean, but you know what? I'll walk. I'll do the thing if they do, because it would be fun. Actually, it wouldn't be fun, but it would be fun to have to pay it off, I believe. But that's the story, because I know people have come to the show new that happened a long time ago. Back when the Cowboys were really good, it was just on the heels of their dominance of the early 90s and the breakup of Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson, and then just watching Jerry just screw up the general manager chair year by year and the talent dissipate. And of course, that led to some horrible seasons. But this is a really talented football team, there's no doubt. And Zay, there's no doubt, as you lead us into hot or not, our topics we've missed halfway through the show, that any other general manager would have been fired long ago if he weren't also the owner, correct?
Yeah, can't fire yourself.
I mean, I still love when, like, Bob Costas asked him, you know, every other general manager would be fired at this point, and would you ever fire yourself? Oh, no. Oh, no. It's the family business. It's the family business. Zay, how are you, my friend? What do you have in our hot or not topics this morning?
I'm good, E. I appreciate it. So let's go to Detroit, where the Cincinnati Bengals beat the now 0-6 Detroit Lions. Ooh. Yeah, they're not looking too good. But offensive lineman for the Bengals, Jordan Carman, needed something to eat Saturday night before the game and was asking for recommendations for restaurants in the Detroit area. Well, people recommended Eminem, who is from Detroit, his new restaurant called Mom's Spaghetti, which is named after his famous line from Lose Yourself. If you don't know the line, palms are sweaty, knees bent, arms heavy. I don't know, vomit on the sweater already. Mom's Spaghetti. Yeah, that's the verse.
Mom's Spaghetti.
All right. So Sunday comes along, game time. Carman was seen on the field yakking, throwing up, and went to Twitter to say he does not recommend Mom's Spaghetti.
So he got the food poison? They sent him a recommendation?
Yeah, he got the little bug. Somebody said go eat Eminem's, which it's Eminem's new spot. It should be good, but
it's actually his restaurant.
Yeah, it's actually his restaurant.
Okay.
So I don't know what he got there. I'm sure he got some type of pasta dish. It's called Mom's Spaghetti, so I'm sure they serve
rotten meatballs or something.
Yeah, but homeboy, yeah, he was yakking it up on Ford Field.
Well, that's not good. I'm not hot on that at all. And we also had that on Monday Night Football. Did you hear the story of A.J. Brown?
Yeah, bad Chipotle.
He had the bad Chipotle, and that dude had the bubble guts on Monday Night Football. Remember, I mean, before the game, the Titans are playing the Bills, and it comes out that A.J. Brown's not going to play. It's an illness, not COVID. Of course, you always got to say not COVID now. No, but he had the Rhea going, and he lost like 8 pounds in 24 hours, Zay.
Man.
Yet that dude still got out there and played.
He was their best receiver.
He caught seven balls, 91 yards. That's having some cojones to get out there and do that, because you know, if you've been in that scenario, we've all been there, you never know when something's going to strike. You could be running a route and planting a foot. And oh.
Yeah, that's Paul Pierce, NBA Finals, when he was wheelchaired into the locker room. Everybody was talking about Willis Reed when really he just needed some Tums.
Oh, he needed some Pepto or something. And there's no hiding from that, Zay. And listen, everybody listening, male, female, we've all been there. You just need to be near the restroom at all times. You just have to be. And my man AJ Brown, my guy, who's the Carmen for the Bengals?
Yeah.
But he was throwing it up.
Yeah.
Coming out the top shelf there. Yeah. Hey, it's kind of an interesting, speaking of the Detroit Lions 0-6, you see it's kind of a reunion weekend. So the Lions are playing the Rams this week. It's part of a pretty C-level list of NFL games this week. Also not a great college football weekend. Best college football game of the week might be tonight. I'll tell you about that coming up. But so Detroit's playing the Rams. That means Jared Goff against Matt Stafford. And Matt Stafford may get benched. Jared Goff might get benched for this game. There's talk in Detroit of making a switch because Goff has been so bad. Meanwhile, the Rams are 5-1. Also, I believe this weekend the Houston Texans play the Arizona Cardinals. Hi, J.J. Watt. Hello, DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe the Cardinals will sign Whitney Merciless now that he's been released by the Texans. That would be nice and be a full homecoming for the disastrous organization down in Houston. They play currently the best team in the NFL, the 6-0 Arizona Cardinals. All right, we'll come back, reset those headlines. We'll talk football with a man who knows some football, our man Dan Neal, a lifetime Longhorn, a two-time Super Bowl champion, and a member of the Longhorn Hall of Honor, talking Texas at 4-3. Is the season salvageable? We'll talk with him coming next on B&E.